Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is Someday is Just a Thought, and I'm going to be joined by my good friend Mara Gleason today. Those of you who don't know Mara, she's the co-creator of One Solution, a leading-edge global initiative to create a world where persistent global challenges are more clearly understood and quickly alleviated by a more profound understanding of the mind, which actually is even cooler than it sounds in practice. But I'll let you evaluate that for yourself. I first met Mara. Mara, when did I first meet you? Do you know? Do you remember?
I remember our first Skype conversation was when I was in Spain. I think it was in sometime in late 2011 or something like that.
Okay. That's right. And I think I was asking you about how the hell do you help people get results with this understanding? Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It was something like that. I've forgotten that. I do remember our first conversation, but I didn't remember what it was about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've had so many since
we
then,
have.
So.
And yeah. Since that time, Mara's come and presented numerous times on Super Coach Academy, and we've presented together at conferences, and we've just hung out a bit, and she's my daughter's hero. So all of that. But the reason that I asked Mara to come on the show today is because I saw her and her, what do I call him, your boyfriend? Is that, that's the appropriate thing?
Yeah. And partner in crime.
But and yeah. Partner in crime. Eric Olson make a presentation at the Three Principles Global Conference in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. And she was telling her story of how this huge, what is now this global initiative that is showing up in places in Africa and Europe and America and just beginning to really spread through the world, how it went in a really short space of time from a kind of a fantasy, a kind of a, oh yeah, one day to something real. And what I heard in the story in a way that I'd never heard it before was just how applicable that is for any of us who have a big dream, have something that we would love to see happen in the world, but it just feels like, wow, you know, it's, you know, one someday. And so, Mara, you know, I know this is all is in danger of becoming a sort of like a spiel, but would you share your story for people who haven't heard it, which is going to be the majority of the world?
Yes. No, I, like I was saying at the conference, it's still very fresh and alive for me. So I, not stale yet. It will be someday, but not yet. So yeah, speaking of someday, what happened is, as you know, Michael, but others might not know, I've been sharing an understanding of the mind based in something called the Three Principles, which is really just a way of looking at what are the fundamental forces that cause the human experience. And it's actually quite different than most people understand it currently. And it's quite simple. And it gives people a real understanding of the internally generated nature of our experience. So we're not at the mercy of externals. We're not, many of us are suffering a misunderstanding of the mind, not a difficult world, even though it does appear that way many times. And so in sharing that understanding of the mind with people of all different backgrounds, everywhere from prison inmates to MIT-trained Russian physicists to hockey players to moms and dads and kids and everything in between, I've discovered that learning how the mind works is really all a human being needs. And I mean all human beings. And so in my years of doing this work, it became really clear to me that, you know, this is kind of the one thing that would solve everything. And that wasn't just an idea I had. It was something that was being proven to me over and over and over again and working with people. And almost without my realizing it, it had become a little habit of mine in my own inner monologue that when I would read something in a paper about, you know, the Syrian refugee crisis, or I would see things about, you know, another mass shooting in the United States, I would always hear this little voice in my head go, you know, someday everyone's going to understand these principles, and excuse me, but shit like that's not going to be happening in the world. And I hadn't realized how much that had become a little voice in my head. This, you know, someday everyone's going to know this and these problems won't be happening in the world. And it wasn't until I was having a conversation on the couch with my boyfriend and now partner in global change that those words came out of my mouth. And I said to him exactly that, you know, we were talking about wanting to do a conference, but really wanting to focus on bigger change in the world. How do you actually implement big change in the world? Not that there's anything wrong with small change, and small change is needed in order for big change to happen. But we were kind of just having more of a philosophical conversation about that. And I found myself saying that out loud. Yeah, because someday people really understood how the mind worked, these problems would go away. And his response to me was, well, you know, someday is just a thought. And because of that, it can't get any closer to you. And it was like one of those, you call them, Michael, like OMFG moments, like, or what do you call them?
HFMOG, holy freaking mother of God, we'll put it like that.
Yes, it was one of those HFMOG moments for me, because it just went in and it kind of struck me to the core. And I thought, God, that's true. And like, yeah, of course that's true. Everything is thought. We live in a world of thought, but there's so much of our thought that doesn't look like thought to us. It looks like realities or just the way things are or the world out there. And so in that moment when he said those words to me, I heard it. And I went, God, you're right. And I've been saying this to myself for years now, as if somehow something outside of me was going to make this happen in the world. And that was literally like, it sounds grandiose, and I don't mean to get up. It's like, there was no turning back. Like, the second I saw that, I couldn't do anything else but devote my time to bringing a new understanding of the mind to solve some of the world's biggest problems.
Now,
like,
just
that was it for me.
For people listening, you know, I really want to encourage you to, you know, absolutely enjoy Mara's story, but just think for yourself, you know, is there something in there that you've been sitting with for months, for years? Like, well, someday I'm going to do this. Someday I'm going to make my life about this. Someday I'm really going to fill in blank here. And just, you know, just to open up to the possibility that very thought is why it looks undoable, and that as soon as that thought doesn't look real, new possibilities will begin to emerge. And actually, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you to talk about a little bit, Mark, because I know in like your web show Mining the Mind, and in your seminars and with your clients and in everything you do, you do share this simple understanding of the mind, and you know, I don't feel I'm particularly putting you on the spot because it's what you do for a living, but for somebody listening who this is relatively new to them, how do you talk about this potential of the mind?
Well, I mean, just right now, because this is sort of what I'm seeing about it in relation to the One Solution Initiative, is I see that the state of the world and the issues in it are a symptom of a simple but profoundly wide-reaching misunderstanding of how the world works. So, and really, I think it's as simple as just reversing a misunderstanding, which we've done historically as humans with many different things. You know, we thought the world was flat, now we know it's round. We thought germs were all kinds of crazy things, from noxious air and, you know, demons and what have you. Now we know that it's microorganisms, viruses, bacteria, and little kids can tell you to wash your hands so you don't spread germs. You know, so it's not as sort of crazy as it sounds, but yeah, I would say right now we're living in a time where I don't know when, I'm hoping in the next year if we do a good job, the entire world will realize we've lived with a misunderstanding of the mind, that our external world is somehow causing our internal feelings. And because we've misunderstood that, there is pervasive unnecessary suffering in the world. And when there's pervasive unnecessary suffering, people behave out of that. So conflict is normal. You know, psychological suffering leads to all kinds of behavioral and physiological issues. So chronic stress, all of the health difficulties associated with that. And on a much bigger global level, the fact that, you know, nations are in conflict with each other, people are violent with each other, that leads to instability and refugee crisis and blah, blah, blah. And I could go bigger and bigger. And the flip side of that is not just that people feel bad feelings, but it's also that we've misunderstood that our good feelings come from the external world, too. So the idea that, I mean, it's so clear to me now. I was recently watching the Leonardo DiCaprio documentary on Before the Flood and global warming or climate change. You're not supposed to say global warming because that's confusing, but climate change. And you can see, breaks it down very simply. It's that big companies don't want to lose money. So there is the knowledge and the technology and the money and capability that we could all have renewable energy sources powering the most developed countries of the world, but we're not doing it because, in my opinion, people think their experience comes from the outside in. So I have to hang on to my money in order to be okay. So that fundamental misunderstanding that somehow something outside me can make me happy or something outside me can make me angry and sad, and therefore I have to do a bunch of disastrous and unhelpful things in the world, is the only problem that the world is suffering right now. And what these principles offer is a very simple map, or almost like a guidebook to how the human experience really works from the inside out, which is why I love the title of your book, Inside Out Revolution, because it is like a revolution. It would change everything if people understood that their experience comes from the inside out via basic universal forces that we all have working in us, just like we have lungs and a heartbeat working in every single one of us. We have thought. And thought is the paintbrush which paints the picture of our external reality. But because the force of consciousness makes us aware of what we're painting on that picture, and it feels so very strong and compelling in our sensory system, it's like the best special effects system on Earth, so we don't see the edges of it. We don't see that we're the creator of it. We're just in the experience of it. So we're living in, you know, our own thinking and the feelings that that brings about. But the good news is that in learning these principles, people discover that they're hooked up to a greater intelligence behind life that we call the principle of mind, which simply put just means that once you wake up to the fact of thought, you can begin to have new thoughts come in. So new thought is all that has to happen for people, for them to have a new feeling. They don't have to go searching for something outside of them. They don't have to go getting rid of something outside of them. They just have to see that they have the inbuilt capacity for new thought. And the more people were looking inside to explain their human experience, we wouldn't be having all of these problems on the outside.
Now, how does this map out? So I didn't warn you I was going to spring this on you because it hadn't occurred to me to. But, you know, if for anyone listening live, we just had an election here in America. And what I've noticed, and I don't know if you've seen this, but about 50% of Americans are really happy about the result of that election, and about 50% of the Americans are unhappy, and about 100% of people who live outside of America are freaking out. Now, how does one of the questions that, you know, I'm getting on Twitter, I'm getting on Facebook, I'm getting in my email, from people is, well, how do we cope with this? Now, what's interesting to me, I'll go first, okay? What's interesting to me as I've seen this is that people have made up the future, and they're running around like headless chickens, either ecstatic or despairing because of the picture of the future they've made up and are living in inside their head.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way as everything else that you're talking about, when you start to see, oh, my God, this either elation or terror that I'm feeling is not a comment on reality. It's a comment on my thought in the moment. It opens up the space for new thought, and not just new experience, but new possibilities of what can happen in the world. Now that's, I just, you know, that's my side. You know, what does it look like to you?
No, I mean, yes, I've also gotten a lot of questions about this in the last 24 hours. I actually love it as a really rich example of this right now because it is so big in people's consciousness. I completely agree with you, first of all. We all become like apocalyptic fortune tellers. The world is ending, you know, and it's like, well, hang on, hang on. Maybe it's ending. You know, the truth is we don't know. We really don't know. But I do think that's interesting. And I saw that. I happened to be in the UK the morning that the Brexit results came out. And I remember finding it so fascinating because as a non-Brit, I could see how apocalyptic they became in their thinking so quickly. And I even said to myself, now remember, if Trump gets elected, have this perspective. I could see how unhelpful it is that people run into a whole bunch of thinking in their heads that paint a horrid picture, and they don't see, oh yeah, I'm using the paintbrush of thought to create a horrid picture. I mean, the truth is we all woke up this morning and, you know, the world's still here and the apocalypse hasn't happened. So, you know, and I'm sure there are people who go, yeah, we'll wait until January, wait until he's in office. But I can only give you an example of what happened in my mind, because I think this is just such a, it's such a simple thing to overlook. Is I felt horrible for about 3 hours as I was watching the results come in, because obviously I wasn't a fan of him. But I know that there are other people that felt just as horrible when they thought maybe Hillary was going to be elected, and that's not the point. But what was really interesting about what happened for me is that I was so upset. And I was thinking the worst, you know, because that's what happens when people are upset. And if you don't know that that comes from thought, you'll be stuck in that experience. But I knew enough to know, yeah, this is just because I'm really disappointed right now. And I got into it. I was upset. I was angry. But what was really interesting is in that state of disappointment, I really was scared. I really was fearful, like, he's going to get us blown up, or, you know, the planet's going to go up in flames because he's not going to care about climate change and blah, blah, blah. And that was all my head could create. And then I went to bed and I woke up and I was still kind of upset and cranky. And then I had to go on with my life because I had calls scheduled and meetings, and I had a series of really great meetings about, you know, the South Africa conference we have in March, and about someone who's interested in doing a prison reform program in New York. And I just got into my day. And so, therefore, my thinking shifted. And after about 3 hours of meetings, it was so fascinating to me because when I came out of those meetings and I looked back at the situation of who had been elected president, which 3 hours before had seemed pretty depressing and dark and bleak, I suddenly thought, you know, this could be really good for the world. I really thought that, and I meant it, because in a completely different headspace, you will have different thinking. And I was open to letting my headspace about my feeling about it change. You know, I didn't want to stay angry because I knew it wasn't useful, but that's also because I know my experience can only come from thought. And what ideas started coming to me were things like, I really think this is going to galvanize a grassroots sort of energy in this country that's been missing for a while. I also think I'm really excited to see what happens in 2020 because he's broken the cycle of politician after politician after politician. For the first time, somebody from completely out of left field managed to make it to the presidency. I wonder who's going to go for it next. I feel like it's a whole new ballgame. So my mind just started coming up with different things because I was in new thought about it. And I could be in new thought about it because my understanding of the mind is such that I wasn't going to put a stake in the ground and say, I can only feel bad because the person I wouldn't have chosen was elected. Because I knew that, my head could change, you know?
It's fascinating because I had amazing chats with each of my kids. And, you know, Oliver and Clara, you know well. And they both got to that same point in about an hour. They went from, because they were Bernie Sanders fans. So, like, this was the anti-Bern. And yet, within an hour, they both got to that a similar place of, wow, this could be extraordinary. What comes of this? could be amazing. Mm-hmm. And they got quite excited and energized. But the conversation that was most interesting to me was talking to my youngest, to Maisie. You know, because we took the dog for a walk when the election was still going on, and it looked like it was probably going to swing Trump's way. And she had the questions that a kid growing up in California would have, because the California's got a Democratic bias. So California kids are going to grow up thinking Democrat good, Republican bad, on the whole.
Yeah.
So she was like, "Does this mean World War III?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know. I certainly hope not." And I think really the only reason that's a question and people are saying that is because they're scared about the fact that he's unpredictable. And so, you know, whereas we kind of know how things are going to play out when somebody plays by the rules, when somebody comes in who doesn't, it's just unpredictable. And she said, "Well, are my Hispanic friends going to be forced out of the country?" And I said, "No, I genuinely think that that's just, you know, there's no way. We're well past that point in American history, if not human history." And we talked a little bit more, but then at a certain point, I could see she stopped being scared and she started twinkling. And I said, "What's up?" And she said, "Oh, I'm just thinking this is really exciting because anything could happen."
Exactly. There you go. And that's true.
And I think that's the bit that's true on both sides of the aisle. Like, part of what's exciting if you're somebody who is for Trump is, oh my God, things that I thought would never happen could happen now that I would really want to see happen. And on the other side, it's the same thing. Things that we thought, well, that's someday, maybe that will happen. Suddenly we're in someday. Suddenly we're in a place where things are up for grabs again at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, the even funnier thing is then, like, I was riding the subway uptown to a meeting in Manhattan. And again, just because I kind of fell into that space of, well, maybe this is a good thing. This might be interesting. And this is what's fascinating about the mind. It's like, kind of like Maisie, your daughter, it's like, anything's possible, actually. And I, without meaning to, just started getting ideas about, well, if he is going to be president. And then I, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I thought out of the blue, like, I have the best economic stimulus package. Like, I actually love to try to get a meeting with him and explain that people's living in well-being is hands down the best thing you could do for the economy, because just generating jobs, well, lots of people can't go to their jobs because they're either depressed, you know, or drug addicted or physical issues, or like, there's so many ways in which I can see that a different understanding of the mind would drive an economy like no other. So it's just funny to me, like, the second my head was open to the idea that maybe there was positive possibilities on the forefront, my mind just started getting ideas about that. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so fascinating, to go back to kind of where we started. When I saw that someday was just a thought, it was like all of these walls that I built in my life without realizing I built them in my mind, really, not in my life physically, but in my mind, started to fall away because they were connected to that idea of someday. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was the idea that, you know, I somehow needed to work my way toward a big vision, a bold statement, my life stream. And I think people do that to themselves a lot, like, oh, I'll get there. Oh, I'm not ready yet. I'll be ready when X, Y, and Z have happened, or such and such connection or expertise or experience or degree or amount of money in my bank account or the right person shows up in front of me. Like, all these ideas that we make up about what makes someday happen just imploded for me. And I realized, oh, I've been stepstoning something that doesn't require a stepstoning. That is an illusion.
There's a great Joseph Campbell quote that some chasms can't be crossed in three simple steps.
Yeah. Someone on our institute told me it's like the book A Wrinkle in Time.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? Literally the concept. It was so long since I read it, but the idea of that you could wrinkle time. So you could take a leap and be sort of in the future without having had to go through every day to get there.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting concept.
Well, so now let's go back to your story, because sort of this happened in sort of January of this year, February. When did this kind of epiphany come?
Yeah, the Sunday conversation happened in December, and then in January we decided to launch One Solution as initially just a conference that we were going to hold, and we thought, to hell with it, let's just have a conference that says this is the one solution to all the world's problems and see if anyone will believe us and actually attend, and can we make that point in a conference. And it was just a delightful magic carpet ride of seeing that come to life and actually discovering that if we were clear about it, people heard it. And so people came, and we had speakers that were wonderful.
I want to back up from that, because I didn't even know this in real time, but before that, you and I got up on stage in New York City in March, and we mm-hmm. gave a talk called Can You Really Change Your Life in Just 2 Hours? And I have not been that nervous about a talk in years. Because I usually know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And this time I was like, genuinely, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that was what was so fun about kind of just everything in my head imploding and letting it all fall away and going, oh, to heck with it. Let's just go for this and see what happens. Like, why not? And I remember saying to you, when you said, oh, do you want to do a talk while I'm in New York? And what would you want to do it on? I said, well, let's say, can you really change the world in 2 hours? Because at that stage, so kind of between January and May, I was just experimenting with what happens when you release your mind to go in a bold direction and make a claim that you know in your heart is true, but you've never felt, you know, like you had the clarity or the permission or the reputation, you know, like all of that crap I'd made up in my head that was somehow going to get me to someday. Like, I realized, no, I just have to go out there and start saying that and see what happens. And well, that talk with you was one of the first talks where we just said, okay, let's just go for it and see how it goes.
Well, and it was, and I want to just say, for anyone listening, we're making that talk available. So if you go to michaelneal.org/onesolution, michaelneal.org/onesolution, you can, I don't know exactly how it works, but basically you can download that talk and watch it. Now, when I heard you tell the story at the conference recently, the other thing that that really struck me was when you started to go for it, you were still very much, from the sound of it, caught up in how do I do it? Like, what's the right way to do it? And then you kind of saw that wasn't the real question. Can you kind of share that bit of the story?
Yes, yes. No, it was really interesting, actually. And it taught me so much about just myself and I imagine probably lots of people. And yet again, I have to give all the credit to my partner, Adik, because when we started planning that conference and putting together a website and having meetings, and we were crazy in that we said, all right, well, let's just pick a date. And I think I even said, so what do you think, like 12 to 16 months out? And Adik looks at me like, no, I'm thinking like, what's the earliest we could do? And when we looked at the calendar, that was May. End of May, because we had other obligations, conferences, whatever. And I thought, are you kidding me? Like, less than 5 months away, we're going to throw a conference, invite people we have no connections to, and make a statement we've never, you know, really made to the world before. Okay, fine, crazy. And that was one of many ways in which he showed me, you have a lot of ideas about things you think you need that you don't. Like, oh, we need 12 months to plan something like that. I mean, he just laughed at me and said, I don't know that we're ever going to feel ready. So just go ahead and do it and learn by doing. I was like, oh, yeah, good point. And then there were so many kind of potential ditches that I almost fell in along the way, like becoming obsessed with the copy on our website and making it perfect and, you know, like the lineup of speakers and what you can say and can't say. And long story short, it was like it became this joke that, like, we can't be anything that we're not. We're just people that have a real hope that there might be a bigger and simpler solution to a lot of the world's problems. Like, that's what we have to go on here. We're never going to have the perfect UN-approved website. You know, we're never going to have a flawless conference our first time putting on a conference. Like, and we really were doing everything with the help of many, many amazing volunteers from our community that came out of the woodwork who we couldn't have done it without. But truly, it was just a team of newbies figuring this stuff out as we went along. And I remember, again, a very pivotal conversation with him when I was kind of fighting him because I wanted to do things in a way that looked good or looked right. And after that kind of argument, I realized I just had to let go of all of that and stop worrying about what I looked like or what we looked like or whether we felt ready. And it was another layer of immense freedom when I let all of that go. I discovered that what's left over is this tremendous oomph and freedom to just share what's real to you and to be who you really are and not get lost in all the rest. And it was yet another reminder that even me, who felt like I was already living a pretty free life, like I didn't feel like I had a lot of restrictions. I had my own company. I kind of did what I want, but I suddenly saw all of these ways in which I was very restrictive of myself and very judgmental of myself that just slowed me down. And Adik's point was, look, we're doing this and we're doing it in 5 months from now. Let's not get lost in the details of the form because there's nothing really in the form. That doesn't move people. And after that, I just went out and started having conversations with people. And those conversations were so full of this kind of free, unfiltered oomph. And I do feel like that's what ended up bringing the conference to life. And funnily enough, the people who attended the conference said things like, this is the best conference I've ever been to. This is the best organized conference I've ever been to. I was like, really? That's cool. We had no idea what we were doing.
Well, and I think so much of it and so much of what I see as a coach holds people back and stops them from going forward is that they think, you know, in terms of even if they think, okay, I'm going to go for it, they're kind of going for it in a really tentative, half-assed way because they don't want to get it wrong or they don't want to try too hard and then be disappointed. And what is invisible is that the missing oomph. So it looks like, well, I tried. But actually, you didn't bring your oomph with you.
Right. No, and that was what I got. It's like huge respect for the oomph. And I realized that actually is the only thing you need. Like, I used to think you needed that and then that other stuff helped. But I'm beginning to think that the other stuff doesn't matter at all. It's just a distraction. And it tends to be the first place people's minds go. It's like, oh, well, what's on your resume? What's your degree? What's your website look like? Because people, so many people who, you know, I'm sure you have this as well, Michael, reach out and say, well, I'd love to get involved in what you do, but I don't have a background in blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, no, that's irrelevant. And I've been working on a website for several months, but I can't quite get there. I'm like, yeah, you don't need a website. And it's been even more proof since the conference and since we decided to go full out on this initiative. I mean, I had in the last 48 hours, I've got a meeting set up at the UN on Tuesday. I've got an introduction to a European queen, I won't name who's been involved in the elders. I've got a potential meeting with the CEO of the MBA in Africa about our upcoming Africa conference. And I say all this only because all of these just came from oomphy conversations. We don't have a real website up yet. You'll see what we have right now is basically just a news site where we've been posting blog-like articles. It doesn't even say what the organization is. And none of those people have asked for it. And I think it's just more proof that people want conversations of oomph. in the world, they don't want to necessarily have to go re-websites all the time. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with websites. I'm just using that as an example.
Let me also just give it out. So if you want to see the – because actually I think it's quite nicely done. If you want to see the One Solution website, go to onesolutionglobal.org. And you can see it there. Now, Jill, on the off chance that somebody listening tuned in a little bit late and is going, okay, so what is OOMPH and where does it come from? What is OOMPH and where does it come from?
It's purple and it wears a headpiece. No, I'm just kidding. what is OOMPH and where does it come from? Well, it's a good question. To me, it's an unrestricted use of the mind. And what I mean, like, we actually talk about this in terms of sports all the time, but it's like when people are in the zone and you hear athletes talk about it, or musicians or stand-up comedians who improv really well, it's like there's something about the part of your mind that's you editing you goes away. And when you're not editing you and you're not overthinking on top of your experience to make sure you do it right or don't screw it up or whatever, it's like you get to drop into a sort of pure, less filtered version of the mind. I was talking to one of our institute students today about it's kind of like when you find the jet stream versus you're blowing on the sails of a boat. Like that feeling of like all the exhaustion it would take to try to blow yourself across an ocean versus just adjusting the sails and finding the best stream of air. And every human knows the experience of when you're just in the jet stream. You're kind of in life without thinking about it, and that there's a feeling of energy and momentum that isn't about you managing yourself. It's only discovered kind of when you stop managing yourself. So for me, when I fell out of, oh yeah, someday someone will show these principles to the world and these problems will go away, and oh, and someday I'll look ready enough and someday we'll have a good enough life. Like when all of that went away, kind of all that was what left over was this very pure wind at my back.
So is that,
and truly really is just a space of the mind. It's very human. It's very ordinary. People have it all the time in life.
I guess that's what I'm sort of wondering, because when I think about it, for me, it does seem to be like as soon as I can get out of my own way, like as soon as I can get out of my own head for a minute, there's the wind, there's the OOMPH.
Mm-hmm.
Which suggests to me it's there all the time, and I just, you know, am too kind of temporarily thought-centric, egocentric to notice it.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the coolest discoveries I made, not at this level, but when I was first learning these principles, was just the idea that the OOMPH was the default. Mm. Like, I didn't have to bring it. I didn't have to learn it. I didn't have to get it. I didn't have to work on it. It's like, oh, no, that's what's left over when I stop thinking about myself. That's really cool. That means it's already there. I don't have to stress about it. And I remember Mark Howard once said, you can rest in mind, meaning that deeper universal use of the mind. And I remember just kind of like, this like huge exhale. It's like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Cause it's just what's left over when you're not working so freaking hard. But as I'm sure you could attest to, you can learn that and then you can learn it again and then you can learn it again. And so, you know, someday it's just a thought. It's just my latest learning of that same human truth.
Yeah, no, I've said numerous times that, you know, first you learn the principles and then the advanced class is a continual set of no, really, even here, really. Like that's the lifelong part.
Yeah, no, when I was on the couch with Adik, I remember when he said, well, you know, some days just a thought, and he said it all kind of like a throwaway, like, well, duh. But for some reason in that moment, I was like, oh, my God, yes, that again. Oh, my God.
Well, I was just telling somebody the other day that one of the the story of how Steve Hardison's eyebrow made me $1 million. And I worked with this coach, some people in the coaching world know, named Steve Hardison. And he, in my very first session with him, I was kind of going through my goals and I got to the one on my list, you know, bring in over $1 million in my business. And I said it so apologetic. I was like, yeah, I've got this make $1 million in my business thing. It's like learn Italian. It's on the list every year. I never do it. I'm just telling you. And he didn't say anything, but he cocked his eyebrow. And I asked him about it months later, and he had no memory of this. So there was nothing deliberate about it. But in that cocked eyebrow, I had a little HFMOG. I saw, oh my God, he doesn't think this is impossible or crazy or any of the things I think. And all of a sudden, I considered it for real, even though it had been on my goal list for years. I'd never really considered it a possibility.
Yeah.
And in that moment of just opening up to the possibility, like you were talking about all earlier, all these new thoughts came in about how I could do it. And that was our first $1 million year in the business. And it was as simple as a moment of not taking my thinking so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly this whole other world opened up.
It's so funny because I think that's a brilliant example of your mind will provide you with ideas in whatever direction you want to look. And what you shared in that story and what I saw on the couch is like, we make up the limits of where we're willing to look. But we don't realize we make them up. We don't do it on purpose. We're not like, I'm going to limit myself here now. It just happens invisibly because that's the nature of thought and consciousness. It's sneaky. But we make up the limits of it. We don't realize we made it up, or we somehow think they're external. But just in a moment of realizing, oh, wow, I made that up. I completely made that up. Then your mind becomes free. And that's what I think is so fascinating. Like you said, and then you made over $1 million in revenue that year. It's like, now all of a sudden, every single meeting I'm getting asked to go to has to do with global change. Isn't it interesting? Like, I just shifted my mind and said, yeah, you're free to go here now if you want, sweetie. Like, lo and behold, it's just having a parade.
That's amazing. If you're listening and you want to ask a question about this, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579 outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. I know there've been a few people who called in and then gotten a little bit gun shy about talking about the election, and that's fine. We're not here to call anyone out or indeed anything. And I certainly can keep talking for the next 12 minutes or so. So we'll be fine either way. But if you do want to ask a question, come on. I guess the other thing that I'm curious about is, have you seen this oomph, this freedom of mind show up in other areas of your life, even though it was kind of unleashed in the context of the One Solution Initiative?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, it's funny because I've basically launched an international nonprofit with my boyfriend. And up until this point, I would have thought that was a bad idea, you know? like, don't work with the person you're also in an intimate relationship with. Oh, and by the way, don't start a company with the person. But it's just been interesting how much I can see how you just, again, you build those limits and go, oh, I couldn't go there. Oh, I couldn't go there. But actually, I think you can go anywhere, really, truly go anywhere. And if, you know, you're kind of following something deeper, not something intellectual or something someone told you, it just works out. So there were many times in the last few months where I thought, you know, everyone would tell me this is a bad idea. And then I'd think, well, what does that matter? You know, so kind of like there's been many times of just sort of letting go. And actually, the other thing that's interesting is, the number of people, starting with my father, of course, being the good father that he is, that when they first heard about One Solution, it's like, well, how are you going to make money doing that? It was so interesting to me that was people's first question often. Mm. How do you make money doing that? And I've never been less concerned about money, because in my mind, this is something the world is so desperate for right now. And it was fun just kind of having a brainstorming session last Friday and then again this morning about these different revenue stream ideas that we have. And it's like more than we know what to do with.
Well,
like,
I was going to say, one of the things that I find really funny is that, so I've known Mara for a while, and I ran into her on an airplane back in May, and we were chatting, and one of the things that I said is, it's really nice to see you unleashed. And one of the examples, so we had a very short space of time, bits of the story she hasn't told, you know, she's on stage asking a question to Richard Branson. And then, you know, she's applying for $100 million grant. And I think that's the irony, is it's like, well, there's no way to make money from this, but we might make $100 million to work with.
Well, even the idea of fundraising, I had such a block against that in my head. I never wanted to be a nonprofit because I didn't want to have to go ask people for money, because I figured I can figure out a way to make it on my own anyway. So why don't I? And I actually completely understood that in the nonprofit world, you can charge for services as well as helping. Anyway, long story short, I've never been more excited to ask people for money in my life.
It's brilliant. Hey, we've got
certain that it's worth putting money behind. So I'm like, yeah, let's go do some fundraising. That sounds fun.
All right. We've got a bunch of people online. Let me see who we can get to. Let's start out in Toronto with Marjorie. Marjorie, welcome to the show. What's your question for Mara?
Well, I'm at a crossroads in my own career. I work in marketing, but I've been wanting to do more with helping shape work in the future, bridging that gap between where we are now in the digital economy and how we aren't quite to the point where we found the key that's actually going to create more jobs going forward in a developed world sense. And I was just sitting here trying to figure out, okay, what is my personal brand? And I've got my marketing persona self on LinkedIn. And then there's this thing that I'm trying to get clarity on in terms of how I go forward what do I do? You know, like how do I go forward with this and still earn a living and support my son and all that kind of stuff?
It's interesting. I read somewhere a quote. I don't know who wrote it, so I can't properly give this person credit. But somebody said 98% committed is the most painful place to be. And I remember it hit me because I had been in experiences in my life, like romantically, professionally, whatever, where you feel like 98% in, but you kind of want to do something else or you're not sure. And I feel like and we also have an institute and where students want to make the leap to teaching these principles for a living and not doing what they were doing before. And I feel like in my own way, that was where I was, I didn't know it, but I was like, yeah, I would love for the entire world to see that these principles would solve the world's problems, but I wouldn't let myself go there because I had these ideas that I was doing something else. And there's something about just being willing to say, well, what if I hadn't been anything yet? What if I didn't have my marketing or my didn't? And people get scared, like their mind comes up with thoughts like, oh, well, but that's how you've made money, or that's how you've built your connections, or that's where your credibility comes from. And it's like, yeah, no, I know, but those are all just thoughts. What if I put all of that aside? I was just totally willing to take a look and go, what would I like to do? And have no restrictions. That's where your mind jumps into that self-editing space, where it'll immediately start telling you why you can't do something or why you're not ready yet, or the million things you'd have to do first before you could do X or Y. And that was what was so cool for me. And the experience in the last 5-6 months is just a couple of times, literally almost felt like a video game, just kind of like punching those and watching them go up in smoke, because that's really truly all they are, is they're just ideas that you've developed about yourself, thoughts that you've had that you carry around that make you less oomphy. So if you want to kind of allow yourself to drop it in that space of mind, like Michael talked about, where suddenly, oh my gosh, I could just say I'm going to make $1 million in revenue, or I could just say I'm going to change the world by sharing these principles, like not getting lost in the weeds of the someday, the things I would need, the what if, just completely letting yourself go and seeing, yeah, no, all that's unhelpful thought. What do I really want to do?
You know, I feel like I've spent 20 years trying to figure out what I want to do. And I wonder if I don't think I'm necessarily alone in that. And I wonder if it's because we're going through a time of great change that people can't see, including myself, you know, can't see why. I don't understand what I have to offer and how that applies.
I mean, it's interesting. I don't know how Mara hears that, but I'm not sure that is the most fruitful line of questioning. And what I mean by that, there's a quote that I've always loved, which is from Howard Thurman, who was kind of the guy who was the link between Gandhi and Martin Luther King. He studied with Gandhi and was a teacher for Martin Luther King. And he said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is people who've come alive." And I think that's a different question than, okay, well, how are my skills suited for a changing workplace? Like, there's too many variables in the second question. There's really only one variable in the first question.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's something to work from.
There you go. So thank you, Marjorie. Let's go to Seattle and let's bring Shelley on. Shelley, welcome to the show. What's your question for Mara?
Hi, Michael.
Hey.
I just wanted to give a shout out that is such very timely conversation, and I'm so happy to hear this now in this time, and I'm very inspired, and I wanted to know how I could get involved or how I could do it. Conference, and I think you said it's recorded, so I can listen to one. That's my first thing. Secondly, I don't know. I guess that's it.
Well, let's leave it there because we've only got a couple minutes. I'd love people, because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening, Mara, who'd love to get more involved in the initiative. How do they do it?
Yeah, well, at this stage, the best thing to do, and there will be a lot more to come in the next month or so because we're in the process of building that, but you can go to the website, which is onesolutionglobal.org. So it's all spelled out, onesolutionglobal.org. And then also we have a Facebook group, which is much more just people. Since the first conference, it really lit a fire under a lot of people's butts, and they just said, "I'm going to get out there and start doing stuff. I don't want to wait for someday." And so it's more of a conversation about global change that everyone is making in their own ways, big and small. But that's a good resource to stay in touch about things. And then you'll also see in that Facebook group and on the website, there's a link to the conference, the next one, which is happening in Cape Town, March 19th to 20th. So on the site, it'll say One Solution 2017, and if you click that link, it tells you more about the Cape Town Conference.
Awesome. Brilliant.
And
thank
I think
you.
We should totally get a meeting with President-elect. I'm working on it. Yeah, I think I could get away with
well,
it.
Well, you know, she's got some oomph. She's got some wind in her sails.
That's
thank
right.
you, Shelley.
That's right. I look forward to that. My friend jokes that I'm a little too old for him, but he might take a meeting with me. We'll see.
we'll see how it plays out. Just a reminder as well, if people want to listen to the watch the full video of the talk Mara and I gave in New York City, Can You Really Change the World in Just 2 Hours? You can do that by going to michaelneal.org/onesolution. And if you want, we can get that over to your site as well, Mara, or to your Facebook group, and so people can have a listen. I am so thrilled that I interrupted your meeting at the conference and said, "Hey, can you come on the radio show?" I was feeling kind of bad about it. I was like, "Oh, she's having a meeting," and then I was like, "No, I don't care."
You look like a man with a plan. I was like, "Okay." Sure.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that. It's been fantastic. As I said, it's been fantastic watching you unleash, but it's also, I think, what you're up to, and with this initiative, and Eric and everyone else who's involved is phenomenal. And I look forward to being part of its continued evolution and growth.
Thank you. And thanks so much for having me today. This is really fun.
So thank you all for listening. Remember, you can learn more about Mara and her work at onesolutionglobal.org. You can learn about me and mine at michaelneal.org. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.